Welcome to the Business of Cloud Native. I'm Emily O'Meara, your host. And today we are chatting with Chris Holmes of Grey Matter. And Chris, thank you so much for joining me.
Yeah, for sure. It's good to talk to you again.
And let's just start with having you introduce yourself, both yourself and, you know, what you do, and then also talk a little bit about what Grey Matter is and what Grey Matter does for customers.
Sure. I'm Chris Holmes. I'm the CEO and founder of Decipher Technology Studios, which is being rebranded to better reflect what we do around Grey Matter, which is our intelligent mesh networking platform, which is today very relevant in a hybrid multi-cloud deployment strategy. And really what we're focused on is building an end-to-end platform using AI to surface different types of anomalies across these multi-cloud, multi-tenant hybrid infrastructures that are in some cases using lots of open source cloud native technologies, in some cases using Kubernetes, in some cases trying to bridge Kubernetes environments, cloud native type environments to legacy systems or other cloud type services. And, you know, we sit on top of all that and try to run some BI tools and provide some security tools and look for anomalies.
And can you tell me a little bit about Grey Matter's evolution? How did it start and how has the project evolved and the company evolved over time?
Good question. And it's been pretty significant. We've been in business since 2015, since before service mesh was a thing in the press for sure. We were asked by a fairly large global enterprise to help modernize their infrastructure. They needed to prepare for this kind of multi-cloud environment as they started to look at their assets internally and wanted to bring some of that digital transformation into the next century. So we started studying what Netflix and Twitter had been doing back in 2014, 2015, and they were pretty much the only two that we know of that really were pushing hard into the microservices, you know, universe. When we first built Grey Matter, we were actually building some custom things on top of a project that Twitter had open source called Finagle. And as we have gone through this journey from an enterprise perspective, certainly a global enterprise perspective, Grey Matter has changed fairly significantly. Always maintained its focus on surfacing insights and BI from a business perspective to help an enterprise modernize their infrastructure. But we've now added some very, very, very unprecedented security layers for a true explicit zero trust model. I'm pretty sure we were the first to integrate the open policy agent. I know that some of our competitors recently announced just this week that they had done that. We've had that in our stack for quite a few, almost 2 years at this point. We've been doing token-based security layers all the way down to data planes since we've redone our mesh around Envoy. Envoy proxy is now what we are based on. Plus, we have recently announced that we are supporting the Istio control plane, but we also package our own control plane. And we do that because of the AI insights that we want to surface across an enterprise. So lots and lots and lots of change has happened. I'm excited about where we're going next, which is really data network. Data mesh has become our single sort of focus for 2021.
And then I think you work with some government customers, right?
We do a lot with government and public sectors, yes.
So I was just wondering if you could talk a little bit about what the difference is between working with the public sector, working with the private sector, and if there's any difference in sort of the goals that these two types of customers tend to have in working with you, and even in general in their, you know, cloud native deployments and their modernization efforts.
Good question. You know, it's actually really, really interesting. We have a few private customers, and obviously we've got a lot of good customers in the government and public sector. There's a lot of similarities, tremendous amount of similarities, maybe not the acquisition cycles, but the implementations are somewhat similar. You know, they all care about that cross-cloud service management governance model. They all care about visualizations. They all care about looking at their return on investments and surfacing any type of anomalies or what things are actually costing them across these different environments. which we play a pretty significant role there. But the government side, much like what we're finding in the BFSI side, I might add, because it's very similar, those two, lots of segmentation. And it's necessary segmentation. It's not segmentation just because you want to create a cybersecurity honeypot or something like that. There's legit segmentation that they have to create throughout their application networking stacks. And we, quite frankly, cut our teeth on that. And that's why security is such a first-class citizen in gray matter, is because in that sector, you're dealing with clouds. You're dealing with the typical stuff that you'd see on the public side, on the private side, in terms of, you know, Amazon Web Services or Google Cloud Engine or even Azure, any of those. But you're dealing with those in a totally different type of atmospheric. They're usually cut off from the universe. They're usually segmented themselves in terms of networking. In other words, the clouds that we deploy into sometimes are not the same clouds that you would just go to Azure, you know, .com and look at. It's not even the same clouds as the Azure Gov cloud. Our customers are completely segmented off of those particular clouds and data centers. And the ingress and egress traffic in and out of those is completely managed if allowed at all. So we've had to develop a SaaS-like model that can be deployed in those environments quickly, easily, and operate almost like a fenced-walled SaaS layer in those infrastructures. So from that perspective, it's very different. But it's actually good for us, because what we're finding on the private side is, you know, when you start talking to Enterprise 500 companies, you start talking to anybody larger than that, the Fortune 500 and up, they have similar use cases. I often brief that, you know, cloud native is a strategy right now that most CTOs are looking at. And most CISOs, the chief information security officers, they want to enable it, but they want to enable it in a way that's going to work. And most of these companies still have legacy systems that are not necessarily cloud native ready. In some cases, it's too costly to migrate those legacy systems. And I hate calling them legacy. I like to refer to them as brownfield systems, because most of those brownfield systems are actually running their core business operations. Their pick-pack ships, their customer databases, their human resource databases, their financial databases. These are things that are not going to necessarily be pushed hardcore into the cloud, but their channel deliveries are going cloud native. The way they reach customers is going cloud native. And one of the things that we bring to the table is connecting those brownfield environments to these cloud native environments without having to incur cost of migrating all those brownfield environments into some new cloud native environment that may or may not have the necessary security, may or may not be able to have the necessary segmentation. So being that bridge.
Yeah, I know there's a couple of people in the industry. One is jumping to mind in particular, who says that legacy applications is just another way to say application that turns a profit.
Exactly. It really is true.
I was actually curious to ask about the return on investment question. What is that conversation like for both private sector and public sector? And then what sort of, like, how would they measure that we're getting a return on our investment or not? What is the return that they're looking for?
It's definitely multifaceted, and it's going to create a tremendous amount of data points that somebody's going to have to array that are particular importance to their business. So for example, you certainly can go in and you can look at your Amazon cost for your traditional EC2 layer, how much compute you're using, how much throughput you're using, potentially looking at the cost of moving data around in Cloud One. But to measure ROI and even TCO, because measuring TCO is hard, not just ROI, you are, as an IT professional in any case, regardless of private or public, looking at probably 25 different tools, multiple reports with hundreds of data points on them. How much is my compute on this cloud? How much is my compute on that cloud? How much throughput am I pushing through these clouds? When I connect these two clouds together, I'm going to get more charges for the ingress egress and go to another cloud. there's all of these points that you're looking at. And when you start to add things like Kubernetes and cloud native software, that gets even harder to measure, because now you're trying to figure out, it's not as simple as looking at an EC2 and how much an EC2 costs. It's how much does a particular pod cost on top of that EC2 abstracted infrastructure? How much does it cost me to run multiple containers within that pod? How much is this particular application costing me? And you've got to traverse, you know, multiple layers of networking in and out of this environment to that environment. It's a very difficult thing to measure return on investment. And some of the tools we bring to the table are business criticality. Measure, tell us which services you're running, regardless of the cloud that it's running in, are most important to your business. And then we'll look at it and we'll monitor and we'll alert you when things tip above those thresholds, especially for those really urgent business critical systems. We'll measure your infrastructure layers from those base cloud infrastructure layers all the way up through your Kubernetes layers into the code. We'll tell you things that could potentially take something down that is of business critical importance. One use case is we'll alert you on a layer 3 certificate that you may be using inside your infrastructure for a particular database or an index engine when that thing expires, so that it can rotate. We can also automatically rotate that. But those little types of things could end up costing downtime, which now all of a sudden, in terms of return on investment, the more you're down, the more your cost goes up, the less you're making any kind of return. And when you multiply that by N, because you've got your assets sprawled all over these different environments, you can see why people get a little skeptical at the higher levels in these enterprises as to, well, wait a minute, I've got this brownfield system that is actually turning a profit. It's working. Why am I changing this? And you're telling me I have to cut this big brownfield system up into a thousand little points? I'll never be able to measure or manage it. And that's what we're trying to solve.
Excellent. And then, of course, also you have security use cases and measuring return on investment for security. I actually don't even know where you would start with that.
Well, yeah. I mean, you know, by centralizing your policy, and I don't just mean network policy, but by centralizing your application layer networking policies, by centralizing your policies around your TCP type connections, by centralizing your policy on your data itself, you can manage that policy across a multi-cloud infrastructure now. And by doing that, you can absolutely do two things. Guarantee that the policy is going to be in place across those agnostic environments, and you control those. But you're also going to be able to measure when things fall out of bound of that policy, and you can fix it. You can actually have command and control where you can go in, and you're not going to have to spend hours upon hours upon hours trying to figure out, where do I change policy A versus policy B? And again, security policy is wrapped for us in terms of, you know, network performance, network type policies, things like that you normally see, circuit breakers, rate limiters, but also getting into the very detailed rule type based policy models of this IP address is allowed to, you know, have access to that IP address, or this function is allowed to run under these circumstances by these users. And then on the flip side of that, we audit tap all of that. So at a very granular level in this multi-cloud hybrid environment. So you could literally see everything that's happening across this environment. You can put that into some kind of repository on the side for all kinds of different use cases.
So when you talk to somebody and they have a brownfield application, it's a, you know, pejoratively, we say it's a legacy application. It's doing $1 billion in revenue. Why should they change it? Why are they even considering that?
Our messages don't. Our message, actually, that's one of our big differentiators, is we don't walk in there and say, change that. Usually what that conversation with us is I have this system and it's got really critical data, but it is making and churning a profit. However, for me to reach more channels, for me to be fully omni-channel delivery with all of my different customers, I do need to somehow expose elements of this brownfield system. my OSS, BSS type layers are holding this critical system that will let me build, you know, little apps that are going to run on different phones, or these pieces are going to be an aggregate app that gets delivered via a cloud. And we connect that cloud native hemisphere with those OSS, BSS layers at a really granular level with security. So we don't tell them, shut that down and modernize it, because it doesn't make sense until, one, they have better insight on exactly how it's going to get used in a cloud environment. So you'd look at the telemetry, you'd look at the audit calls, you'd look at the general usage of different aspects of those brownfield systems. And then you could put a business strategy together to say, how would we modernize that old system or relatively new system that we've just invested in? And what parts make sense to be put into a cloud native infrastructure in the first place as a cloud native application? And what parts don't? If it's serving my need, why am I spending dollars on, you know, modernizing or migrating that? Because somebody told me that the database I'm running on a virtual machine needs to be pushed into a container. That's not good enough. We do not subscribe to the rewrite your applications from scratch. We actually subscribe, and we're all about connecting those applications that are actually moneymakers and have crucial data, and exposing those endpoints to cloud native systems and bridging those cloud native systems with those brownfield systems via a mesh network.
It's almost like, you know, sometimes the best approach to tackling your tech debt might be don't pay it. That's kind of what it sounds like.
It might. Going through this for 5+ years with global enterprises at this point, we've seen the gamut of, yeah, we're going to migrate these capabilities to cloud native environment. We can scale them better. They become easier to upgrade or update, but it's only going to be these two subset capabilities in this much bigger system. We've also seen, we're going to take this old monolithic application, which I can't stand the term monolithic, but we're going to take this old monolithic application, and it is heavily being used. Therefore, we're going to incur the cost to quote unquote modernize it and microservice enable it. But we're going to do that in a very, you know, methodical way, where we're looking at each component and we're designing out each component, and that can be a 1 to 2 year transition, but we don't necessarily have to rush into that. And then we've also seen, we're going to deprecate this. We've been running this, but it's hooked to a bunch of different things now via something like gray matter, and there's nobody really using it. So what are we incurring the cost for to even run it, whether we modernize it or not? Modernization there is, turn it off, get rid of it, minimize my overhead on it. I've got these other competing capabilities that do relatively the same thing. So that becomes a migrate the data out of that one particular thing into the places that it is needed and useful, and then deprecate that. So we've seen all kinds of things happen at scale as, you know, folks start going down this journey.
And ultimately, what do you think is the end goal? I mean, why are these companies or these government entities even interested in making the investment in terms of money, time, human resources to modernize, to adopt cloud native for anything?
I really do think that there are a lot of pros. For one, you know, I touched on one earlier, command and control. It is feasible to put command and control interfaces in where you can now see what's running on your end, on your infrastructure, regardless of the cloud it's running in, regardless of the segmentation you have in place. You have legit template-based derivative, you know, infrastructure up that you can now manage, which is difficult to do in some of these old brownfield systems. It's all distributed. It's usually part of the application itself, and it's very difficult to get sort of reporting out of those things without heavy lifting. Speed to market is another good reason. It is much easier when you have your full pipelines in place to do faster delivery. It's well documented. It's not rocket science that when you start to put in this automated infrastructure as a service, platform as a service, cloud native type technology pipeline in place, you're not spending days or weeks tearing down old servers and putting in new servers. You're not spending, you know, days or hours to rebuild a server from scratch with OS patches. So it does absolutely speed up market delivery in, from that perspective. And then it's just a better development. I say this, but you know, it's funny. I see all kinds of things. I know I have a bunch of developers that work for me, and I see all kinds of things on Twitter. I would say that it is a overall more pleasurable development experience than having to deal with code when I was coding. You know, dealing with the old DLL nightmares and dependency trails and dealing with the way you had to build apps, hour-long or days-long compile times, depending on how big your projects were in old Visual Studio Code. The overall developer experience is much, much better. The API ecosystem that you have at your fingertips now, that you can bring in different APIs from different cloud-native environments, is a wonderful kind of thing. The amount of open source libraries that are at your fingertips that you can just pull into your project that handle some complexities that you might have in your applications. All of that is really a bunch of pros and why this is attractive.
Now let's talk a little bit about what you've learned since 2015. How did you sort of get the idea that gray matter was something you wanted to pursue? And then what have you learned over the course of running a business built around it?
Patience. You know, we bootstrapped. This is my first company ever. I've been talking to a lot of different people in the last couple of months in particular. I don't think there's a right or wrong way to do it. We are bootstrapped. We never took money. And we've been, you know, cutting our teeth for real with real enterprise production customers. Some of them are actually very large customers. We don't just deploy into pockets. We deploy at the enterprise level down, which is a different beast completely. I would certainly say that when we first got into this, we looked at the space. We knew that Docker and things were coming. We had been using them internally ourselves. And we knew that Kubernetes was going to become a thing, but it was going to become a thing for certain workflows, certainly not all workflows. We knew that clouds were very, very cool and very real and certainly saved a lot of hardships on the deployment models and the things we just talked about. But at the same time, we've kind of always been a crew that was very attuned to measuring what was put on the infrastructure at multiple layers, you know, from layer 3 TCP connections up through layer 7 HTTP connections. We were always, some of us had a cybersecurity background, so we were always looking at the security of ingress and egress routes at really granular levels, both in a, you know, a defense posture. Well, mostly in defense posture. But, you know, we knew that something like a service mesh was going to become critical. I mean, heck, in 2016, 2017, and I kind of argue this now, although it's getting much better, Kubernetes networking is pretty terrible. And then when you take that and you start looking at multiple clouds, networking in of itself is really hard. It's a hard problem set. And a lot of people don't like to do it. However, when you look at half of the things that get deployed, especially now, everything has APIs. Everything is bundled with networking-like components. You'll have, you know, this proxy with this particular piece of software that you just bought. And you won't be able to go in and change that because that's an application off the shelf that you just put in your infrastructure. Then you couple that with the amount of open source that has matured. Cloud Native Computing Foundation, last I looked, had something like 876 total projects. And if I'm an enterprise CIO and I've got my staff on a global enterprise trying to maintain my business, which is not an IT business, by the way, and my staff is coming and telling me we have to pay for even 100 different tools that probably are all good features, but there are 100 different tools, that's overwhelming to me as a CIO. Or a CTO. I still want to modernize, but it's just overwhelming. And we feel strongly that, you know, some of these things are just features of a larger platform. We are very, very bearish on the fact that things have to be agnostic. I've always said that service mesh and the concept of service mesh should be an agnostic layer similar to software-defined networking. If I could only use my service mesh as part of Kubernetes, then I miss a whole big, huge population because there's things that just don't make sense to push into a container tomorrow. There may be things that don't make sense to push into a container ever. And this technology really needs to be far-reaching across all my OSS and BSS implementations and bridge my cloud tech, my cloud native tech. I mean, it really does. And that's sort of things that we've just learned. We've had to implement all of these type of patterns. And depending on what you read and who you read it from, some of them will be called anti-patterns and some of them won't be. But the fact of the matter is that an enterprise is a mixed universe and network topologies always change. And you have to plan for downtime and failures, and you have to plan for security headaches and potential breaches. And you need to know where assets are running and potentially why they're running there. And you need to have a better sort of handle on detecting anomalies. And I'm not talking about just security anomalies, any anomalies. Service in region A hasn't been hit in 6 months and all of a sudden it's getting 100,000 hits. That's an anomaly that you'd want to drill into and understand what's going on there. It could be very positive. It could be the time of day. It could be the time of year. It could be just all of a sudden that the data that you have in that region is something very popular. But you want to understand all those things as a business and capitalize when you can, and also minimize any risk if there's potential risk that you need to minimize.
And then how has gray matter changed since you started in 2015? And I mean, sort of as you've deployed it in the real life, what feedback have you gotten and sort of how has, you know, actual usage played into changes in either sort of direction, minor or major, or just sort of adjustments to the business strategy?
Two really big ones. And the third one is something I mentioned earlier, but I'll talk about the two that we actually focused on in the last year and a half, 2 years. Gray Matter was always an Overwatch business insight mesh network that we were putting in place. It always consisted of our own control plane with a flavor of Envoy proxy as the data plane. Over the years, we've started to support more data planes because our Overwatch capability should manage not just one particular data plane. We love Envoy. But there are other data planes that we have to pay attention to. We've really focused a lot on that business insight and visualization layer, that multi-cloud management and catalog layer. But we've also, on the other end of the spectrum, the DevOps engineers, the developers at scale that potentially have to deal with horrendous configuration files of all of this cloud native infrastructure. And it's funny, what I think of first, when somebody says, I've got a bunch of cloud native infrastructure running in my enterprise, it's you're going to have a tremendous amount of configuration files at every layer of the stack. Probably YAML configs that have hundreds of thousands of lines up to JSON configs. And then you add in the special sauce, glue, scripts that these DevOps engineers and developers create just to manage this stuff. It's a hairball. It's a nightmare. And we have really, really focused at the latter part of 2020 on simplification. We actually just released a fully template-driven model to deploy a service mesh with maybe answering three or four questions, automatically generating all of that configuration behind the scenes that gets deployed. There's two things that happen in our tool. We've also augmented and made GitOps a first-class citizen in our tool. Again, this is partially because of enterprise setting. Nobody in the enterprise is just going to let you deploy a service to production with one simple button push. It demos really well, and we certainly have demos. But in a real production setting, you're not going to go from, I just wrapped up the code, and I did some testing on my laptop to deploy this into production now. So we made GitOps flows first-class citizens where you've got verification checks and governance models where the enterprise guarantees this is what the templates are. These templates are being checked out. Here's who just checked those templates out. Here's who's applying those templates. The verification happens step one, step two, step three, so that you know before something gets into production that somebody just didn't churn off MTLS, as an example. to let things talk over SSL. So we've really focused on that kind of simplicity in the tool chain. That's been a major focus for us. And now what we're actually really doing in 2021 is making data a first-class citizen inside the network. You have access at every point of the service mesh itself underneath the network. You can see all traffic flowing from these different layers and different devices and different types of technology that you have in your system. And you can do all kinds of pretty neat things, including applying content type policies as content flows from one service to another service. And I'm not talking, you know, one REST API to another REST API. I'm talking content flowing from one piece of software. You're pulling, you know, pointers to data off of Kafka. That data happens to be sitting in some S3 bucket or some other kind of backend object store. And that data is going to be munged and sent to three or four different service tool chains or systems, and we're applying policy, content policy, every step of the way. That's really what we're focused on right now, and bringing that data network together with the actual mesh network.
Excellent. And to ask something a little bit different now, what do you actually do on a day-to-day basis? What's your actual tasks that you do every day?
So Decipher is a little bit more than 60 people, and I wear lots and lots of hats. Most recently, I have spent my last 2 months building up an investment portfolio package, and we are actually looking for investment now. So for me, day-to-day, I'm in tremendous amount of Zooms, or pick your meeting thing, and going through my pitch and having some really, really good conversations. And those conversations are actually very active and actually all have been very good. We received some phenomenal feedback. You know, I'm excited about what the future brings there for us in particular. So that's been my day-to-day recently. But you know, we have a business to run. I talk to almost, or I try to talk to almost all of our customers as much as possible. So a week doesn't go by where I don't have firsthand discussions with customers across the board. I make special time to do that. I also follow that same mantra with my staff. I am a big proponent of doing one-on-ones with my staff, not just the management tier, but I will have my staff set up one-on-ones with me, and we'll go through whatever they want to talk about. In some cases, they want to talk to me about their detailed tickets that they're working on, and in other cases, they want to actually ask, you know, in general, how's the company doing and what the strategy is and how the market is shaping up, in my opinion, and all those good things. But that's, and I spend a lot of time talking to folks like you and analysts, but that usually ebbs and flows depending on the press cycles.
Excellent. Fabulous. Well, I think we're going to wrap up. And the last question is just how listeners can connect with you or learn more.
Sure. They can certainly go to graymatter.io. We're about to release a brand new website in the coming weeks, so hope everybody checks that out. But the current one is pretty good. And also, you can find me on LinkedIn, Christopher Holmes at graymatter.io. Certainly look me up, and if you do send me a LinkedIn, I usually will accept, and I try to answer the messages there, so feel free.
Fabulous. Well, thank you so much for taking the time to talk.
Yeah, thank you very much, Emily. Enjoyed it.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Hi again, and thanks for listening to The Business of Cloud Native. This is Emily again. In case you didn't already know, I'm a positioning consultant who specializes in working with companies in the cloud native and open source ecosystem. If you are having trouble explaining what your company does, who it's best for, and even more importantly, if your prospects can't seem to understand what you do, what value you provide, or whether or not they're even a right fit for your company, you might have a positioning problem. If you think you do, head on over to emilyomier.com to see if some of my positioning information can help and or if you might be interested in working together. Thank you and have a great day.